Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I am your host, Spencer Wilson, flying solo once again this week as Mr. Cloud is still out there on the road taking care of his business. He should be back next week, but you never know. Hopefully he is. We'll see. Hope he's doing well out there, though. And hope you're doing well on Final Four Eve. It is the last weekend of the college basketball tournament. Of course, we'll talk to our buddy Ian Epstein from Prop Swap about some of the things coming up that you can look forward to there. And we'll also dive into the matchups as well a little bit later on in the show. But we're going to start where we always do, which is right here locally, because there was some fun stuff going on this weekend. The baseball team had a good showing against Air Force. Unfortunately, Nevada did drop 2 out of 3 games to the Falcons, but they were relatively competitive, I would say, in 2 out of 3. Game 2 was a little lopsided. But in Game 1, Nevada's only win in this series came in walk-off fashion, with the game going back and forth between the two. They were tied at 3 going into the bottom of the 9th. And then Jalen McLaughlin stepped up, sent a single down the line to score Tyler Bassetti, and won it for Nevada. It was a great game. Again, really back and forth. And scoring kind of coming throughout. But when Nevada stepped up to the plate in that bottom of the 9th, you kind of felt like just the way they were swinging the bats towards the end of the game that they had a chance to walk it off. And to listen to that call, of course, by Mr. John Ramey was fantastic. And then, of course, Game 2, Air Force hit back. Strong 4th inning where the Falcons added 6 runs to increase their lead 8-0 off of 2 earlier runs that they had gotten in the game. Nevada showed a little life in the 6th inning. They were able to add 2 runs of their own. But again, that 8-2 loss, kind of the one lopsided game of the series. But still, I would say relatively competitive for Nevada besides that 1 4th inning that just kind of let Air Force get away from the Wolfpack. It was still a relatively toe-to-toe kind of a game. And then Game 3, Air Force got off to a strong start, scoring a run in the first 4 innings. They would hold that 4-0 lead until the 9th, where Nevada was able to add a run off of Dylan Shrum single to center, scoring Josh Zamora. But unfortunately, just wasn't enough for the Pack in that game. They lost that series 2-1 to the Air Force. And then they got to play the Reno Aces in their annual exhibition game, which is always fun for the folks here and the fans here in Northern Nevada. Aces took a 13-1 win, so obviously a little lopsided there. But Joshua Zamora did get to hit a solo home run in the 4th inning and actually caused some damage out there to the center field structure. So, you know, we're not lying when we say his Nevada lineup has power in it. Be careful. Then the following day, Nevada got to host Sacramento State and took a win 6-2 there. Strong showing from the Pack, scoring. Where they score here? The Pack. 2nd and 5th inning, they added 5 of their 6 runs. Weston Hatton had the only home run for the Pack, which came in the 3rd inning. It was a solo shot, but a great team effort in that game from Nevada to bounce back from the Air Force series and the exhibition game against the Aces. I think, and again, having that exhibition game before you take on another college team, I think can almost benefit you a lot because you're coming off a team that's probably going to be one of the toughest you've played all year, if not the toughest you play all year, and you get to step up right back at home against Sacramento State. And I think they came off of that game with confidence that, hey, even though they beat us 13-1, we still got some hits, we still got some balls in play. So when you have just that little bit of confidence, it can still go a long way. And of course, next for the Pack, they will play San Diego State this weekend, starting today. And then on Tuesday, Nevada will be on the road against St. Mary's. The softball team, though, had a great showing last weekend, sweeping conference opponents New Mexico in all pretty much dominating fashion. Game 1, Nevada and New Mexico went back and forth until the 7th inning, where Nevada put 4 runs up on the board. And, there was just no coming back from that. Nevada won 7-1 in that game. Game 2, similar feel. Nevada trailed 6-4 going into the 7th and final inning, but once again, they exploded for 7 runs in the final inning to beat New Mexico 11-6 in Game 2. And then Game 3 was an absolute dominating performance, with Nevada winning 21-1 in 5 innings. They put up 8 runs in the 2nd, 5 in both the 3rd and the 4th, and then 3 runs in the 5th. And that's one way to complete a sweep, a very dominating way to complete a sweep. Softball team is looking really, really strong this year. And next for the Pack, they will also be hosting San Diego State. But of course, baseball and softball, not the only things going on right now in Nevada sports. The men's golf team had a good showing last weekend in Palo Alto, where they competed in the Goodwin competition. Nevada was 25th out of 26th after the first day. They moved up to 16th after day two, and finally finished tied for 9th after the third and final day. That is the kind of progression you want to see in any team, whether it's over a season or over one weekend competition. The fact they moved up from 25th to tied for 9th is a great, great effort all around by the team. And next they will have the weekend off before returning to Davis, California, a week from this weekend. So next weekend. The women's golf team had a good showing in Fresno earlier this week at the Fresno State Classic, where the pack finished 6th out of 14 teams. And next for Nevada, they will be at the Conference Championships in Palm Desert, California, April 15th to the 17th. And then the men's tennis team went 1-1 last weekend, first topping Air Force 4-3, and then falling to New Mexico 2-4. This weekend for the Pack, they will be on the road first against UNLV today, and then at San Diego State on Sunday. The women's team also went 1-1 last weekend, first losing to Sacramento State 3-4, but then rebounding to beat Sonoma State 4-1. Next, the Pack will be at UNLV today, and then home against San Diego State on Sunday. Track and field team looking good as well at the Stanford Invitational. Morgan Coonfield broke her own school record in the 10,000 meters with a time of 34 minutes, 39.64 seconds. And Lindsay Sickler also moved up the Nevada Steeplechase all-time list. At the meet, Nevada will take part in the Mountain West Challenge happening today. So that's kind of always what's going on with the pack sports. But of course, we have three other sports going on in Reno right now. We'll start with the Reno 1868 FC, who have completed their first month of the season and haven't lost yet, opening the season with a draw against Orange County SC 1-1, then beating Austin Bold FC 2-1, followed by back-to-back 3-3 draws at Fresno and then home against OKC Energy. And they've avoided the kind of typical slow start that we've seen from this team the first two seasons. Not that they're losing games left and right, but it's a win, a loss, a win, a draw, a win and loss. It's kind of going back and forth in the start of the season, whereas this year, it's wins and draws so far. And when you can get that momentum early in the season, it pays off huge dividends the closer you get to the end, because as soon as you get that confidence, as soon as you can just get yourself on solid footing early in the season, the better it's going to serve you as you continue to play, or as you continue to go along. And of course, next for Reno, they will be at the Rail Monarchs SLC tomorrow with a scheduled noon kickoff. And the Reno Express, coming off a bye week, they will stay in Wenatchee, Washington, to play the Skyhawks, who beat them in their previous game 35-21. So they'll get a rematch there. It'll be their final game of two games in Wenatchee, Washington, by the time they come back down here to Reno. And then last night, the Reno Aces season got underway, and it was a really good game. It was really competitive. The first of a five-game series with Fresno. It went back and forth between the two teams all game long. It wasn't like there was one inning where one team kind of broke out and the other one caught up. It was really back and forth the whole time. Reno down 4-2 heading into the eighth. We're able to add a run in the eighth and the ninth to tie the game at 4. Then unfortunately in the bottom of the 10th inning, Taylor Gushi singled into center, scoring Alec Keller and winning it for Fresno. So Aces off to an 0-1 start, but this is usually a close series between these two teams. Four more games to go in this series alone. We'll see what they can do. Game 2 is tonight on our sister station, 6:30 a.m., and with the pregame starting at 6:55 and first pitch scheduled at 7:05, of course, Ryan Radke will be on the call for that. So a lot going on around Reno, both collegiately and professionally, and it's all, for the most part, really, really good stuff. It's been a lot of fun. I hope you guys have gotten out there and supported these teams. It's, you know, weather's getting better, so it's time just to get out there and enjoy the 1868, enjoy the Aces when they come home to play their first couple home series, which is coming up after they play Fresno. They'll be home, I think, against Albuquerque and El Paso for three games. So it'll be fun to get them here and open up that stadium for the season officially. And can't wait. Hope you guys, if you can't make it to the stadium, tune in to 6:30 a.m. Listen to Ryan Radke call the game. Not a lot of people out there you'd rather listen to call a baseball game besides Ryan Radke. When we come back, however, we are going to talk to local golf pro Mike Mazzaferri as the Masters is right around the corner. And, of course, we'll have our interview with Ian Epstein from PropSwap talking about some Final Four opportunities for you this weekend. That's coming up here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Welcome back inside the studio. Very happy now to be joined by one of our local golf pros here from Sierra Sage, Mr. Mike Mazzaferri. Mike, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us. Somehow, we have arrived again at the start of the golf major season. It seems like it just flies by and then it comes right back up on you. But the Masters, just a week away. Saw an interesting stat that said we've had 52 winners in 82 years, which means we've had a lot of repeat winners. And Mike, I'm curious, why do you think that is?
You know, I think the Masters is one of those majors that it's played at the same course, obviously, and players that have been there 20 times have so much more experience than that first-year guy. They know every break in the greens. They know every yardage. You know, it's like playing their home course because they played there so much. And so experience counts for a lot, you know. And when you look at Jack Nicklaus winning at 46 years old and you know, some of the winners of the Masters being, you know, older and more mature players, it's experience on that golf course.
And they've made some slight changes to that golf course as time has gone on. And one of those is that they've made hole number five, which is a par four, 40 yards longer. Does that affect players that have that kind of experience? Does it help kind of level the field any much, or does it not play too much of a role?
You know, I think those players that have played there a long time still know the green, still. And it's just a new number. They're going to hit a longer club into the green. You know, it affects the shorter hitters more than the long hitters. You know, the bombers are still going to hit a short iron in there. But, you know, it's not that big of a factor.
And then we talked about a fair amount of amateurs being and then we talked a little bit off-air about that. We have six or seven amateurs in there. And when you go to the Masters, you don't get the same kind of setup that you would get with a lot of USGA courses that are also on the tour. So what is the toughest thing about for new players when they get to the Masters for the first time?
You know, I think the tradition, you know, it's like walking on hallowed ground where you know, there's so much history has been made at the place going back to Double Eagles and by Gene Sarazen, and there you can just hear the roars there, you know, of past champions. And I think that puts extra pressure on you because you're in a special place. And a special event. It's Bobby Jones's tournament, and you know it's watching the Masters, and it's like we know every hole, you know. And here you are. You might have won the U.S. Amateur or the Asia Pacific Amateur or even the Latin American Amateur. You're in the Masters. Yeah. You know, that's a big deal.
And right now, the Vegas favorite is Rory McIlroy. I believe he's 8-1. Is the odd he's coming out at? Do you agree with that? Do you think that right now he is the favorite to win the green jacket this year?
You know, Rory's really kind of rededicated himself. He's playing full-time on this tour this year, which is a little bit of a gamble for him because that means he's going to have 1 year playing the U.S. Tour and the European Tour to qualify for the Ryder Cup.
Oh, gotcha.
But, you know, he's committed to this tour. He's worked on his game like he never has before. I think it's a fair odds at 8-1 for Rory to win. But, you know, there's so many good players that, you know, And he's long enough, you know, it's just a matter of is he going to hit the irons and putt well enough. Yeah. And he's got the length. When he played Tiger in the match play, his irons weren't that sharp. You know, and you can't miss hit irons at Augusta because you're going to make bogeys.
What did you think of that match? We'll just take a quick sidebar here. But what did you think of that match play with Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods? Because there was a lot of lead up to, oh, we could see this, and we got to see it. Do you think it kind of lived up to the hype of those two?
Yeah, you know, I don't think either one of them played exceptionally great. Rory hit a couple of wayward shots at the end there, but they didn't. Neither one of them gave it to the other one. But you know, I think it was good to see them go head to head. And I think I don't care what anybody says. Tiger's still got a little bit of that intimidation factor. You're still playing against Tiger Woods.
Definitely.
You're always going to be the underdog as far as the crowds go and things. And, you know, it was a good match, and the match play was great. It, you know, it was an All-American final, which nobody would have predicted because typically the foreign players play much better when it comes to match play.
And speaking of Tiger, he's getting fairly good odds going into the Masters. I think he's off at 12-1 right now. Where do you think his game is in terms of the field that he's playing in this year, and do you think those are fair odds for him?
You know, I think it's fair. Tiger's probably swinging as good as he's ever swung in his career, and I think it's about his sharpness and tournament golf, and I think he's getting there. He's played, and he hasn't played a huge amount of rounds, competitive rounds, but he's played enough where, you know, the guy knows how to play golf. He knows how to win, you know, and that's something you don't teach, you know, the winning part and the competitive part. And he has the fire again. You can tell he's not just out there. He wants to win. And so I think you got to make him a favorite. I mean, he's won more than anybody in this field. And you know, you could put 10 players on a piece of paper, and he's probably won more majors than those 10 players, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got to count him in, especially when he's showed that he's swinging well and he's rolling the ball pretty well.
And then who would be your kind of long shot to look for? Who's your kind of guy flying under the radar right now that you think, hey, watch out for this guy if he gets to Saturday and gets on to Sunday, watch out for him and what he can do?
You know, my couple of players that were pretty high up in the odds were, I like Brooks Koepka, because we haven't talked about him too much, but he shows up for majors.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, most of his wins are majors. Francesco Molinari has been playing great golf, and he's putting well. And he hits it so well from tee to green. You know, he's got nerves of steel, basically. And then, you know, the long odds, when I look at this list, I like Brant Snedeker, because Brant's been playing pretty well. And, you know, 125-1, I'm going to put a few bucks on Brant, because – he's long enough and he's experienced enough, won enough, that I think he draws the ball, and that's what sets up well.
And then we talked about the amateurs on the tour, but for anybody that is starting to play the game or looking to play the game of golf, a good way to learn about a sport is to watch a sport. So what is a good thing to try to pick up for your own game while watching the Masters?
You know, I think especially for young players, I mean, they had the drive, chip, and putt this week, and you see all the young kids out there that have so much talent. But I think what jumps out, either watching those kids or watching tour players, is pre-shot routines and methodically going about taking each shot one at a time. And you know, it doesn't do much for speed of play when they watch the tour players taking so much time. But, you know, I think it's about doing it the same every time. And, you know, I think that's what you can learn from watching the best players in the world.
And then weather's supposed to be getting nicer the next couple of weeks. This weekend's supposed to look pretty nice. Is there anything we can look forward to at Sierra Sage coming up this coming week, or just for the season ahead?
The way the winter's gone, Spencer, we just look forward to being open.
Yeah.
So it's been a long winter. No, we've had some decent days now. The golf course is coming out of winter really well. We just need a little warm weather to get it growing a little better. But we're still on our off-season rate until April 15th, that Monday. And
okay.
And we're obviously doing all the same things we've done in the past. It's very affordable golf in good conditions. And got golf boards, of course. Got all those out of mothballs and ready to go for spring.
And then I can't have you on the show and not get your winner from you. We've talked about the favorites, the underdogs, but if you had to pick one that say, this is my guy, I think will win, who right now is your green jacket winner this year?
I'm going to take Francesco.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Any specific reason, or just the way he's playing right now, you just feel confident?
Just because I think he's probably the most consistent player out there, and he's going to handle the hype, and he curves the ball the right direction. You can never count out the lefties, because it sets up well to lefties with Phil and Bubba. But, you know, I think Francesco's proven over the last 12 months or so, he's just a competitor, and he's been the most consistent player out there.
Well, Mike, I appreciate the time, man. It was great talking to you, and can't wait to see how the Masters unfolds.
All right, Spencer, thank you.
Always enjoy watching the Masters. It's you know, I can't sit down and watch every golf tournament all the way through, but you sit me down in front of a major and I will watch it all 4 days. It's a lot of fun, especially around the Masters, like Mike just mentioned, just the tradition that goes along with it, all the pomp and circumstance that goes along with it. It's just one of those sporting events that just makes you enjoy being around the world of sports every year. And then, of course, a big part of sports nowadays is sports betting. And earlier today, got to sit down on the phone with our friend from PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein, and talk to him about Final Four weekend. Here's how that sounded. Joining me on the phone once again, co-founder of PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein. Ian, thank you very much for joining me. And as we get ready to dive into the Final Four weekend, I have to know, how much of the Final Four did you have in your own bracket?
I actually did pretty well. If you've been following along, I think I've been nailing some things. And so I have Texas Tech, Michigan State, and Virginia in my Final Four.
Wow, so you almost nailed it. Almost all the way through.
Yeah.
Did you have North Carolina over Auburn, or did you have Kentucky over Auburn?
Exactly right. Yeah, I had North Carolina coming out of that region, but I did like Auburn. I just didn't have the guts to take them over North Carolina, but Auburn, you know, the knock on Auburn was that, you know, they run a fast paced offense, up tempo offense, which is what North Carolina does, and you know, North Carolina was just longer and could rebound more, but Auburn proved the doubters wrong, and then did the same thing as Kentucky. So they find themselves in the Final Four. However, Auburn is the longest shot of all four teams to win the championship.
Well, they are the lowest seed remaining as the number 5 seed, and they'll go up against number 1 Virginia. So let's dive into it. How do you see that matchup playing out? What would you think of the smart bet would be?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with my original pick. I have Virginia winning the whole thing. I believe I've come on the show and talked about how much I like Virginia. They've just got more talent, more size. I think they're better coached. So I'd be staying away from Auburn and riding with Virginia in this game.
Are you surprised that Virginia is the only number 1 seed still standing?
I'm not. I think, while Michigan State wasn't a 1 seed, they won the Big Ten, which was probably the best conference in the country. Michigan State beat Duke, which was the biggest favorite in the tournament. So although Michigan State isn't on the 1 line, Michigan State is just as good as any of the teams in the country.
So would you take Michigan State over Texas Tech then, or would you think that it is a possible bet to take Texas Tech over Michigan State, or do you think we're pretty much destined for a Virginia-Michigan State final?
I hate to do this, but usually, I like upsets. You know, at PropSwap, we're always rooting for upsets. And, I mean, believe it or not, the fact that Texas Tech is in the Final Four, you wouldn't believe it, but they were actually 201 odds back in November to win the championship. So the fact that they find themselves in the Final Four is kind of crazy. And we have a huge ticket available for sale on Texas Tech. But in terms of how I see it playing out, my pick is Virginia over Michigan State in the championship.
And you mentioned some of those crazy tickets that you've had. As we enter the final weekend, what's been the one bet or the one ticket that you've seen that's really stood out to you so far in this tournament?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, PropSwap is a broker, a marketplace where people can list their bets for sale and we'll find you a buyer. It can be a future, it can be a prop, it can be a straight bet during the game, doesn't matter. Just go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. And so we have a customer who bet $1,500 on Texas Tech to win the championship at 201 odds.
Oh my gosh.
So this ticket collects $300,000 if Texas Tech wins the championship, 2 more games. And right now he has it up for sale on PropSwap for $65,000. So it's this kind of deal or no deal, Howie Mandel type of situation where do you take the guaranteed $60,000 or do you roll the dice and try to win $300,000? That's just one of the many tickets we have up for sale right now on PropSwap.
Man, that it amazes me every time I hear the numbers that get reached in these certain scenarios. But you mentioned prop bets. Will you guys provide some of your own prop bets that fans can bet on for the Final Four in the championship, and also can fans create their own prop bets for it?
It's got to be a legal sportsbook ticket to be sold. If you go on there, you can buy something that someone else has previously bet at the casino. But like I said, we've got tickets up for sale on all four teams. And because, you know, these teams like Texas Tech were 201 so early in the season, the people who own these tickets can sell them to you at a discount compared to what's at the sportsbook. So, make sure you go to PropSwap and you compare the prices on PropSwap versus the prices at the sportsbook, because a lot of times you can get a better deal by buying from another person. Also, PropSwap allows you to bid on tickets. So if you see a ticket you like, but you think it's a little too rich for your blood, you can submit a bid to the seller, and oftentimes they will accept less when it's offered to them. So you can't create your own, but there's a litany of tickets up for sale, whether it's college basketball, NBA, golf, really every sport is covered. And then again, for the sellers, there's a ton of money to be made by just doing what this guy did with the Texas Tech ticket. You find a good team at long odds, that's, you know, a mistake by the sports book. If you get on that, if you can pounce on that, you can sell it on PropSwap and make some good money. And we always suggest to make two tickets. That way you can sell one for a profit and then still ride out the second one, so you keep some skin in the game.
Yeah, plenty of opportunity for a lot of winnings to be brought in by somebody, especially here in this last weekend. But Ian, thank you very much for joining us, man. It's always fun to hear from you and hear what's going on in the world of sports betting. And can't wait to hear about the craziness that comes from the final weekend of the tournament.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Spencer.
Always enjoy talking to Ian. And man, the amount of money that gets put up and sold and all that stuff when it comes to betting always drops my jaw to the floor, thinking that somebody can, you know, just put $65,000 up there for a ticket. That's borderline mental in my view. But then again, I don't have that kind of money to even play with. So that right there tells you how that's going. But big thank you to Mike Mazzaferri. Big thank you to Ian Epstein. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about both men's and women's Final Four, as well as take a look at the NHL and NBA playoff picture and how those have come together. That's here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. All right, as I mentioned at the start of the program, it is Final Four Eve for the men's tournament. However, the women's Final Four goes down tonight, starting in just about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes or so. Two number two seeds, Oregon and UConn, going up against two number one seeds, Baylor and Notre Dame. Oregon and Baylor will be the first contest. Baylor, the number one overall seed in the tournament. The Oregon Ducks, who have been just flying along this season. It should be a fun matchup. It should have a pretty good pace to it. Should be up and down the floor. Should be pretty exciting. And then, of course, the second matchup, kind of the marquee of the two, the defending champion Notre Dame Fighting Irish, going up against one of the most recognizable dynasties in college sports, which is the UConn women's basketball team. And that one should be, I mean, that one could come down to another buzzer beater like it did either last year, the year, or 2 years ago. I believe it was last year. I think it was the year Notre Dame won the championship. And I could see that game again going down to the final shot, who gets it, deciding the winner. And I think that one could be the closer of the two games, not to hate on the Oregon Ducks at all, or the Baylor Bears, if that ends up being some kind of wild upset blowout like UMBC over Virginia last year. Even though I don't think it'd be as bad as 16-1. I mean, Oregon's a two seed, and Baylor's kind of been in a world of their own this year, so say it's 1-2, might be oversimplifying it a little bit. But still, I don't see either of these games really being a blowout. I think they'll both be pretty fun, but especially keep your eye on that Notre Dame-UConn game coming up later tonight at about 6 o'clock or so. And then, of course, we dive into the men's Final Four. You heard Ian Epstein there say that he had three out of the Final Four correct, only missing Auburn. He had Auburn falling to North Carolina, the North Carolina overcoming Kentucky in the Elite Eight. I was not so lucky. 0-4. I was looking really good. All four teams were alive going into the Elite Eight round, and all four of them lost. Don't know how that happened, but not great. Not a great second weekend for me. Had a pretty good first weekend. I was pretty confident with my decisions. I thought I had thought everything through pretty well. I was proud of my process in choosing winners. And you get to the second weekend, and someone just threw a big old pie in my face. And it was unfortunate. But I like the matchups that we have because I feel like it's definite favorites versus definite underdogs. I mean, Virginia and Auburn. Granted, Auburn is a Power 5 conference school coming out of the SEC, but Virginia, kind of along with Duke and really along with North Carolina, they've kind of been in their own league this year. And with Auburn's win over North Carolina, that's obviously going to give them a lot of confidence, especially beating Kentucky to get to this point. But I like the fact that you know Virginia's going to be the favorite, you know Auburn's going to be the underdog, and both teams having something to prove. Auburn's kind of been proving themselves all year, going toe-to-toe with SEC teams like Tennessee and Kentucky and Florida, and just seeing them go back and forth with them. And Virginia's got something to prove, too. Again, being the only number one seed to have lost to a 16th seed, and that was last year. They looked like they were in trouble this year, also against the 16th seed Gardner-Webb in their first-round matchup. So for Virginia, I feel like since that game against UMBC last year, it has been about proving that we are this good and we deserve to be taken seriously for a national championship. I think they've done that really well in this tournament, especially getting past that Gardner-Webb hurdle and kind of flexing their muscle throughout the other three rounds. This is going to become a kind of battle of attrition, I feel like, between these two teams. Who can stay hotter longer from the outside? If Kyle Guy and this Virginia three-point offense gets rolling, it's going to be a lot of grinded out kind of possessions for Auburn to keep up with Virginia. But I think it's going to be fun. I do kind of agree with Ian. I think Virginia is going to be able to get the upper hand on Auburn as you get into that final 10-minute stretch of the game. I feel like that's where they're going to really want to flex their muscle and make a statement. And I think they will. I don't think they're going to blow Auburn out. I don't think it's going to be some lopsided, crazy victory. I think it'll be within 10 points. But I think they're going to start to stretch it within that last 8 to 10-minute stretch of the game. Then you have Michigan State and Texas Tech. Again, a Big Ten school going up against a Big 12 school, but Michigan State in the Big Ten was just on a level of their own this year. And again, that conference had a lot of talented teams as well, with Michigan coming out. You had Minnesota make some noise kind of later in the season. It was a fun year, but Michigan State really asserted themselves as the team in the Big Ten. And although Texas Tech has been a fun team to watch, this one I feel like is going to be a little more lopsided. I think the first half has a chance to be close and be pretty competitive, but I feel like when Michigan State comes out of the locker room for the second half, they're just going to crank it up to 11 and rip the knob off and just go to town on Texas Tech. So I don't know if Virginia and Michigan State would be the most fan. Well, I don't know if it'd be the most exciting with the tradition of the March Madness tournament in terms of upsets and seeing underdogs kind of thrive. I mean, Auburn, Texas Tech, again, would kind of be the underdog final or the underdog championship game. But I don't think both of them are going to be able to pull it off. If one is going to do it, oddly enough, I feel like it would be Auburn. I feel like if Auburn can put it together, they'd be able to get over Virginia. I don't see Michigan State losing to Texas Tech really in any kind of circumstance. I just don't. I feel like they've coming off a win against the number one team in the tournament and winning in a close fashion against Duke, they're going to be riding so high and have so much confidence in themselves. I don't think Texas Tech is going to be able to get over that hurdle. But speaking of Auburn over Virginia, I could see that happening if Auburn can make a run late first half, early second half. Either go into the locker room on an 8-0, 10-0 run or start the second half or within the first 2 or 3 minutes of the second half, start to pull away on that run and really put pressure on Virginia. Make them have to hit threes to come back and beat you versus letting them kind of run their offense, hit a three, and then you going down trying to respond. If Auburn can put Virginia in a tougher spot, then I think the Tigers could pull off that upset. So I could see it Michigan State versus Virginia. I could also see Michigan State versus Auburn. I just don't see Texas Tech making their way into the national championship game, although they did just get Coach of the Year on that team. So you never know. This tournament's been surprising, and it should be a lot of fun to see what goes down in the Final Four. But, of course, as college basketball season is wrapping up and college hockey season, the Frozen Four is just a couple weeks, I think about a week or so away. National Hockey League and the NBA season also coming to an end, and right now we know the NHL Western Conference teams that'll be taking part in the playoffs: Nashville, Winnipeg, St. Louis, Calgary, San Jose, Vegas, Dallas, and Colorado will be the 8 Western Conference teams in the National Hockey League. Colorado clinching their spot in the playoffs last night when they went to overtime with Winnipeg. That 1 point that they got, regardless of the win or loss of that outcome, that 1 point was enough to put them into playoff position. But hats off to Arizona. The Coyotes didn't have that great of a season last year, and they really came out and they were kind of stuttering through the first half of the season, or really first third of the season. And they kind of started just to crank it up slowly but surely and just kind of held that momentum all the way through that second half of the season and were competing for a playoff spot, which you didn't hear a whole lot of the Coyotes being a possible playoff team going into the season this year. So it was fun to see that. Kind of surprising that Edmonton struggled the way they did after being in the playoffs last year and kind of flexing their muscle in that postseason run. Interesting to see them finish second to last in the NHL Western Conference. I mean, 1 point to Anaheim and then about 8 points above Los Angeles, who's the last team in the NHL Western Conference. But a little surprising to see them having that bad of a year. But as of right now, with each team having about one or two games left, you would have Calgary taking on Colorado, Calgary being the number one overall seed in the Western Conference. They would play Colorado. Nashville, being the number one seed in the Central Division, would take on Dallas. And you would have Winnipeg versus St. Louis and San Jose versus Vegas. And those would be four very exciting matchups coming out of the West. I'd be excited to see San Jose and Vegas rematch from their second round meeting last year, where Vegas won in six games, actually won the series in San Jose. So I think that would be a really fun rematch to see. And then, of course, not everything settled in the Eastern Conference either. We know seven of the eight teams, with Tampa Bay, Boston, and Toronto, Washington, the New York Islanders, and Pittsburgh, who clinched their spot last night, as did Carolina, who clinched their spot in the wild card. And that leaves two teams battling for one spot: Columbus and Montreal fighting it out for that final wild card spot. Right now, both teams have 94 points, so they're tied on points, but Columbus has three more wins in regulation than Montreal does, and Columbus still has two games to play, whereas Montreal just has one. So right now, the favor is leaning towards Columbus to get that final spot, but you never know what Montreal could pull out of their hats. But that one game, really, that's all you have. And then, I mean, if you lose that game, you're pretty much just sitting there praying that Columbus can't pull off their last two games. The tough thing is, though, that if Montreal can't get at least 1 point, at least lose in overtime and put a little pressure on Columbus, then it doesn't matter, because they're tied at 94 points right now, and Columbus has that tiebreaker. So Montreal has to get at least 1 point from their final game in order to put some pressure on Columbus, who plays at the New York Rangers and at Ottawa to end their season. So two road games. You never know what could happen on the road, especially in the NHL. So we're in for a treat between those last two teams and that fight for the final spot in the NHL playoffs. And then, of course, we talked about the NBA Western Conference. We know who's going to be participating in those playoffs, with Golden State and Denver still 1-2, Houston and Portland right behind them, Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Clippers, who had a very nice second half of the year, and Oklahoma City and San Antonio bringing up the last two spots. But nothing has really changed in the Eastern Conference since last week. We still have Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, and Indiana off to the playoffs, but we still have five teams battling for three spots. Right now, Detroit, Brooklyn, and Orlando hold the 6th, 7th, and 8th seeds, with Miami and Charlotte trying to close in. Miami just a half a game back of Orlando and Brooklyn. Charlotte 2.5 games back. So the Hornets starting to fade, hanging on by a fingertip, with about 3 or 4 games to go for each team in the season. So we'll see how that plays out. But it's looking good for Detroit, Brooklyn, and Orlando, and looking the worst right now for Charlotte. So it should be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see how these seasons end and how we go right into the playoffs, because NBA and NHL playoffs always deliver on fun moments, and just should be a lot of fun overall. And then, of course, some open wheel racing news. The Formula One Bahrain Grand Prix wrapped up this past weekend. Another 1-2 finish for Mercedes, who has all but one of the possible points you could have through two races. They've gone 1-2 in Australia and Bahrain. Valtteri got the fastest lap in Australia. They just missed the fastest lap in Bahrain with Charles Leclerc of Ferrari getting it. And man, what a tough race for Leclerc. He was the fastest car through practice sessions. He was the fastest car through qualifying. He was the fastest car during the race. Unfortunately, some electronic troubles shut the engine down, and he fell back to third. Still managed to finish on the podium thanks to a safety car. If the caution hadn't come out, Max Verstappen probably passes Leclerc and knocks him off the podium, and that would have been a real punch to the gut for the young man from Monaco, who has had a really strong start to the year. Probably could have beaten Sebastian Vettel 3 weeks ago in Melbourne, and continued to beat him in Bahrain. So we'll see if the tides are possibly changing over at Ferrari. And then, of course, IndyCar getting ready for their third round of the season. Practice sessions at Barber Motor Sports Park in Birmingham, Alabama, wrapped up today. And rookie Felix Rosenqvist, who is a Swedish rookie driver who had a very solid race in St. Petersburg, topping some of the practice charts in Barber after their sessions today. So should be a lot of fun to see how that plays out this weekend at Barber. That always breeds some fun, close racing. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the Alliance of American Football and their decision to cease operations earlier this week. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Earlier this week, it was announced that the Alliance of American Football will suspend all operations. They got, I think, 7 or 8 weeks, 8 weeks, but 7 games into their season before this decision was handed out. It's obviously, it sounds like it's more of a money situation. They don't have enough money to keep the business afloat. And that's always going to happen with any business. You're going to need money to keep it afloat. When you don't, it just makes it tougher, obviously, to pay everybody. But it's not just that they need money to survive. It's that you're trying to survive in a market where they just don't want football right now in the spring. That's the tough thing. When you try to launch a spring football league, think about all of the different sports that you're competing with. Mainstream sports. The NBA season's coming to an end, and the NHL season's coming to an end. So the regular season comes to an end, then you go right into the playoffs, and you're expecting those fan bases to stop watching a season they've already been invested in. Those seasons start in October. They've already been invested in these seasons. Then when the NFL ends, the Super Bowl's over, and that big hurrah is done, everyone goes to the NBA and the NHL. And if they don't do that, about a month after the Super Bowl ends, you have the Major League Soccer season starting. And a month after that, you have Major League Baseball season starting. So there's so many options on the professional level alone. And then with that, they're also competing with March Madness that goes on through the last couple weeks. The last 2 or 3 weeks of their season has been competing with March Madness. There's so many things going on in the spring, it's just tough to try and get any kind of sports league off the ground. And I appreciate the fact that the Alliance of American Football tried different things. No onside kicks, no extra points. You can, you know, you go for two on a touchdown, then you can try to convert a 4th and 13 for an onside kick. I appreciate the different ways they tried to approach it. But I also think that when you're taking a game that people know at a certain, you take the NFL style of football and try to make some tweaks to it, it's going to take people a little while to just fully accept those changes. And you don't. And in this case, the AAF didn't have enough money to survive that period. And that's the toughest thing. You're trying to get yourself off the ground. And you're also trying to take attention away from these other sports that are, I mean, and not to slam the CBS Sports Network, but when that's channel, you know, up in the hundreds somewhere, and you know ESPN by the back of your hand, you know Fox by the back of your hand, you know ESPN2 like the back of your hand, when you can just jump to those different sports, it's tough to then try and take even more attention away from those networks and get them onto this network to watch your sport. It's just a tough time of year to try and get anything off the ground. And again, I appreciate the way they tried to do it and the fact they started small, which is what you have to do. I think 8 teams is all they had. But even that alone, it's just tough to get anything going off the ground in this kind of scenario. I mean, it's like throwing a chihuahua into a pen full of pit bulls. It's going to end poorly for you when you try to compete with this kind of a market. I think the best thing to do is look for a summer football league. Let the spring take care of itself. Start your season in May. Let your regular season go from May to June, and then or May to July. and then have your playoffs in August, so that way these young players that want other opportunities to play in the NFL can have this season through the summer, really show who they are, and then possibly get a ticket to preseason or just get accepted onto a team in week one. We've seen a couple players from the AAF get signed to NFL contracts, but you know, few and far between for those in the future. But that's the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. Big thanks again to Mike Mazzaferri and Ian Epstein for joining us. Always fun to talk to them. Enjoy the sports. It's going to be a fun weekend. Final Four action, both men and women, with the national championships coming up Sunday and Monday. So enjoy that. Baseball's back. MLS is back. Just enjoy all the sports. And get out there and support the local sports as well. Nevada Sports, the 1868, the Aces. It's a fun time to be a sports fan in Northern Nevada. Enjoy your weekend. Be safe out there. Peace.